Good afternoon. Welcome to second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got all your John Deere products up there. Go up and see them. They've even got little toys for the kiddies. Go up and fill their stockings or put some stuff
under
them.
You're like Santa.
Got it all. We even got the little electric rider gator that you can drive around and run over the other little kids with.
You could take Barbie on with that.
Yes, you could.
You got the Barbie car.
Yep.
And then you got the little miniature gator. Yep. I like it.
You'd have the off-road version. So, yeah, go up and see him. Somebody got
ran
over.
That was exciting. Oh, that was somebody getting run over.
Yeah.
I was like, wait.
Wow.
None of us did that. Where did that come from?
Well, Ronit was thinking about the traffic accidents or collisions she was going to have to handle between those two vehicles.
I was thinking about the hyperemesis. That's where I went.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Now that we've all come clean on that.
But go up and see them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, and they'll let you drive one of those little electric gators around the showroom and see if it fits your needs.
Nice.
Yeah. Or you can get them online at PapeMachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Squirrel.
Yeah, exactly. God, we're easily distracted. It's probably medication for that.
That was
Dr. Lev's like, I got to get up there. These people need me.
That was almost harder than the first hour.
Wow. I know. Good Lord. Yeah, it's all about the beginning, isn't it? So our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev, and she has been a practicing physician for 25 years. She actually, I'm going to call it her claim to fame, because that's the part that I'm kind of like fixated on. She was the chief medical officer of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy from 2018 to 2020. How cool is that?
Didn't find any cocaine in the coat room when she was there.
Oh, my God, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Cracked down on that stuff.
Atta girl!
Yep.
Atta girl, Dr.
Not on her watch.
How'd you like to be the doctor for drug policy now? Yeah. Oh, yeah. We won't even walk you into that minefield in case you get offered a job again and they hold this against you. How about this? Let's go back to the alcohol versus marijuana thing, because honestly, that is the one where the regular people, I consider myself regular people, and when people come at me with that, I just want to say, you know what, you're an idiot, and that's really not an appropriate response, because it doesn't really move the needle.
No. People don't understand, and by the way, you guys are so funny.
We work with what we have.
So, all right, how to explain alcohol versus marijuana. I don't know if I did a good job on the Dr. Phil show. I kind of think that I didn't, because I think of my kids say, don't look at the comments. And then I got a lot of mean comments about, like, I wasn't listening to the lady after she said, marijuana is worse than alcohol. So let me see if I try to do a better job. Let's compare alcohol versus marijuana in a science way. So, number one, pharmacology. Alcohol is water-based, okay? So you drink alcohol, you pee it out, okay? It's in the water part of your body. You feel a drunk. Marijuana is fat-soluble. Everybody knows that. People who smoke marijuana realize that. What is the fattest part of your body?
Your brain.
Your brain. It's going to your brain. Okay? So, again, alcohol is not great. Marijuana is not great either. But, like, we want to see which is worse. It's like, I say, picking your poison. Like, do I want liver cancer or spleen cancer? I don't want either one of those, right? But let's break down alcohol versus marijuana. So marijuana goes to the water. You pee it out. Marijuana goes to your brain. Neuroreceptors. Alcohol, how many neuroreceptors does your body have for alcohol in your brain? None. What about marijuana? It affects the cannabinoid receptors. We know that they exist. What about the brain? How does alcohol affect the brain? Well, we know that when you get pulled over for drunk driving, the cops say, put your finger to your nose and can you walk a straight line? Your motor skills are off. But if you're using marijuana, what happens? If you get pulled over, you may be able to walk a straight line and put your finger to your nose. But if you're asked, you know, walk a straight line, raise your right hand, and then turn left. You'd be like, okay, I have to walk. And
what?
Did
you sound
right?
Like the guy in the song we just played?
Or was it left? Do I turn which way? And it affects your memory and your thinking and your timing. So it's a different type of effect on your brain. So you could choose, do I want to not walk, stumble, or do I want not to think? Psychosis is another thing. They say, oh, alcohol causes psychosis. Yes, it does. And we have data on that, but it's a latent disease. These are people who, they have what's called Korsakoff psychosis, and the people who are chronic alcoholics, and it does destroy your brain and causes psychosis, but it's not after getting drunk one time in college, right? But you could use marijuana once in college and have a psychotic episode, and I've seen that, right? I had a patient the other day who was driving down from Humboldt State, college student, driving down. He called 911 on himself. He said his parents were going to kill his brother, and that's why he was driving down to save his brother, and there are bags of blood, and he's calling the police to ask them to save his brother from this horrible thing. At the same time, his dad called 911 on the son, saying something's wrong with my child. He's not acting right. He ended up in the emergency department on a psychiatric hold. Very delusional, very paranoid, very scared. I asked him if he uses marijuana. He did. And I said, do you think, I didn't think he would be able to answer this, but I thought I'd try it. I said, do you think that you're anxious and paranoid? Do you think that that's related to the marijuana? And he said, maybe. It didn't stop the paranoia, right? He was still paranoid. He was still seeing bags of blood, but he acknowledged in his brain that that could be from the drug. And that gives hope. Because he may have this one psychotic break from using marijuana, but if I explain that to him and he's young at 19 years old or 20 years or whatever he was, then he, if he doesn't do it again, he may be fine and not be condemned to a life of psychosis.
This was his first time?
Yes. I don't know I can't remember if it was his first or other, but it was a very, very serious psychotic event.
Yeah.
He had to be admitted.
Yeah.
To a mental health ward to detox, and then once you detox, and it's not as quick. You detox from alcohol. I'd rather have an alcoholic in my emergency department than someone with psychosis of marijuana, just because it's faster. Right? I'll clear the bed out of the emergency department faster with an alcoholic than someone who is psychotic of marijuana. That takes more time to get out of your brain than alcohol. Both alcohol and marijuana, you were talking about drug driving during the break, they're additive. They're both additive. You don't want to be drunk and driving. You don't want to be using marijuana and driving, and you don't want to do both. So the other day, tragic case, I took care of a 21-year-old who was in a car accident. His alcohol level was less than 0.08, but he also had marijuana on board, and he killed a 50-year-old gentleman on the freeway. Probably didn't even know that it happened. It was altered.
Yep.
He was going to be okay, but he just killed someone. He's going to have to live with that.
Yep.
I don't think he meant to do that, but whatever physical injuries he had, he's going to have to live with that trauma of taking someone else's life at such a young age.
Dr. Lev, we see that apparently the largest part of the population that's beginning to use marijuana is the over 65 crowd. Are you seeing any of those patients coming in displaying any?
Absolutely. So let me think if I remember the statistics, but the statistics for California is the number of emergency department visits for people over the age of 65 has increased 1,084%.
Wow.
Huge.
What the
Huge.
Hell?
Well, so, yeah. Yeah, but I read an article on this, and it is the younger generation telling the older generation, oh, try this. You'll feel better.
I can see that.
You can get off of these drugs if you just try this.
I definitely had, though. I had a grandpa who came to the emergency department, and the grandson.
Yep.
And what grandparent doesn't just adore their grandchildren? I do. I'll do anything for them. Grandpa was telling his grandson that, you know, I got all these medications and I can't sleep and I don't feel good. And with good intention, the grandson said, hey, why don't you try this brownie? And guess what? He slept great. Best sleep he ever had. The problem is he ended up in the emergency department because he couldn't wake up. He had encephalopathy. There's no way to detox him. I had to admit him to the hospital because he wasn't himself. And, you know, that's what happens when you play doctor on your own. And I had to explain to the family that were just there in shock. They didn't mean to hurt their grandfather. And I was kind of thinking, like, do I need to call CPS? No, I didn't, because they were victims themselves. They didn't understand. Grandpa has a liver problem. Marijuana is metabolized in the liver. So if you smoke or eat marijuana, young kid, it'll be in and out of you. But in grandpa, it's going to stay in them for 3 days.
Right.
Plus, Grandpa needs all those medications because he's 80-something years old, and he has liver disease and diabetes and high blood pressure. Those medicines are keeping him alive right now. You can't just replace him with pot.
Yeah, with your grandkid who has no skills. Well, you have all these people at these dispensaries.
Exactly.
I was
advice.
Well, I walked into a business for an appointment, and the lady behind the counter that... You know, I kind of know her. I mean, she's there all the time. And she was talking to her dad, older man, and he was talking all about how his dog, and he couldn't find his dog. And she's like, your dog died like 3 years ago. And the dad's like, no, the dog was just at home. I just saw him yesterday. And she's like, no. And I'm listening to this conversation, and I'm thinking, I think your dad's got dementia. So... And then he gets out and gets in his car and drives away. That was kind of alarming. Next time I saw her, I said, hey, so what was the deal with your dad? You know, does he have dementia? And she goes, no, he was buying CBD gummies to sleep. And the person at the pot store said, you know, you should take two instead of one or three instead of five or whatever the thing was. Or here, try these. And the guy was just tripping. Driving around, he was a nice old man, had no idea, taking CBD gummies just to sleep.
You know what? I don't know why my daughters are bothering with 4 years of medical school and 4 years of residency. Malpractice suit. They could have just, if they want to be a doctor, you just work at a dispensary, get a certificate for a few years.
Go to the dope store and be a doctor. Yeah, terrific.
You know, that brings up a great point. You know, if I was working at a bar... And I overserve somebody, I can be sued and held liable if something bad happens as a result of that. When was the last time you heard of anybody at a pot shop getting sued because they didn't actually prescribe it, but they sold a product that sent somebody over the edge? I would think there's huge liability there.
Bill, let me answer that.
I think it's just a matter of time, and we know that from history. It was just a matter of time before we had product liability and false advertisements for tobacco.
Right,
but and it took time to get the opioids, and it's just a matter of time before we see lawsuits for marijuana. But you talked about CBD, and I think that that's important because people think, oh, well, CBD is healthy.
Right.
The problem is twofold. One is you don't know what you're buying. So I don't know if that gentleman really bought CBD or if he bought marijuana.
Exactly. That's what I told her.
There's no product liability. With alcohol, if you're going to the store and you're buying alcohol and it says whatever proof, it is whatever proof. There are standards that are regulated across the world when it comes to alcohol. We do not have that oversight anywhere when it comes to marijuana. So you don't know what you're buying. Number two is, for all listeners out there, if there's one thing that you could use with your friends and family, especially older people who are taking medications, is check your medications that you're taking for your blood pressure or sleep or anxiety, whatever medications that you're taking. Make sure before you use marijuana or CBD, you check that you don't have drug interactions, because the drug interactions could be really serious or even deadly. And if you go to drugs.com and check that drug interaction checker, you could put in on the checker your blood pressure medicines, your blood thinner, and add cannabis for if you're using marijuana, or cannabidiol for CBD, and you'll see if there are drug interactions. And there are over 500 medication interactions with CBD, and I don't know if that's what happened to the gentleman who was like, took two doses instead of one, making whatever You know, I don't know.
Well, his daughter told him to stop taking it, and then his dog was dead again. So, you know, that was actually sad, but a good thing.
No, it's good. It's important to understand when you have a bad reaction what happens to you, so you could prevent it and not just blow it off. So that I think that that's and it wasn't lethal. There are people who have had internal bleeding. People think internal bleeding for marijuana. Yeah, you could die if you are taking blood thinners and add marijuana or CBD to that and make your blood even thinner. You could bleed to death. And we've seen those type of reactions in the emergency department.
Well, hopefully everyone who's listening, this is all going by kind of quickly. I hope that you will re-listen. And if you have friends and family who think that this is a no big deal type of thing, I hope that Dr. Lev's information is really ringing home. We have more time with her. She is our hostage till the top of the hour. But we do have to take a quick break. You can find the show at wethepeopleradio.us.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. In a recent court case, Freed versus Garland, it was determined both medical and recreational marijuana users have no right to firearms because marijuana use was associated with elevated risky decision-making. It is beyond dispute that marijuana users experience altered mental states that affect their judgment, creating irrational and unpredictable behavior. There is a clear relationship between the bevy of recent active shooters and marijuana use. Remember, let's be careful out there.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
When we are in my
mind. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
And there you have it. It does make you crazy. Makes us crazy. Because all this stuff seems so easy.
Can you say crazy?
I can say crazy.
I can even say
I said midget
it.
Last week.
I know.
You oh, no, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you can't say that.
I did want to tell Renit that there is, I guess you could call it a bright star out there. And there is a civil case in San Diego where a dispensary has been sued for wrongful death of a girl that went in and got high-potency THC from them, had an episode with hyperemesis, and she suffocated on her vomit and died. And they did file a civil case. Now, it's a year old, and I haven't done a case update lately, but those cases are occurring. And if there's any attorneys out there that would like to talk to me, I'd sure love to talk to you about how you could get rich on the back of the marijuana industry.
God, you would think.
God, yeah.
How can you put something out there that harms people? Do we have any other stuff like that that we put out there that we know is harming people and you just get like a free pass?
Tobacco and alcohol.
Yeah, but you don't get a free pass on that.
And they got sued into oblivion.
They basically got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can also talk about Delta 8, Delta 10, Kratom.
Yes, let's talk about Delta 8.
Yeah,
Delta
we can talk about
enlighten us on all of those, if you wouldn't mind.
What a tragic case. I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, my heart breaks each time because it's those are preventable.
Yes.
Those are preventable deaths that shouldn't happen. Delta 8. Okay, so this is government playing doctor. When the government plays doctor, it's not good things happen. Or playing politics. This happened from the Farm Bill, when Congress passed the Farm Bill in 2018, they legalized hemp, and their definition of hemp was a political definition, not a medical or agricultural definition, was less than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. That's what was written. In Europe, the definition is 0.2%. And what happened is like, oh, well, that's the definition of hemp. Why don't I just create products that are Delta 8 THC? That could, you know, because it's only illegal if I got more than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. So now we got a loophole, and people pounced on that. So if I make Delta 8 THC, that's legal. I can call it hemp because it doesn't meet the political problem. And the result of that is they created, these are synthetically made. Synthetic means it's made in a lab. This is not a plant. I listened to a webinar from the FDA. They say there's not enough plant material to create all the Delta 8 and Delta 9 products that are out there. And people have gotten sick, and babies have even died from these products. And it does make me scratch my head, because for the FDA to approve anything, you have to go through, you know, mice testing, animal testing, before you're even allowed to test in humans. And then you have, you know, levels of testing. It takes years for a drug to come out on the market. And yet these Delta 8, Delta 10 products never been tested on a mouse or a rat. The first population to be tested on is us, humans and children. And we're suffering the consequences. Now, what happened with that? The FDA said, this is not our problem. Congress, you messed up. You need to fix this with your screwy definitions. We're not going to be able to regulate something that hasn't been, you know, studied in mice. What FDA did is put out a bulletin saying Delta 8 products are not approved by the FDA. They have health risks. They're harmful. They have psychoactive and intoxicating problems. FDA and Poison Center received numerous adverse calls. And then I love the end, the way they end it. Keep it away from children and pets.
Renate, in your expert opinion, do you think that that the FDA will ever approve a recreational marijuana? Do you think that it can receive an FDA approval somehow?
Okay, so let's split that up. We have to understand what the definition of marijuana is. Marijuana is a plant with 500 different chemicals. Can the FDA and save face with all the other medications and say, you know, something with 500 different chemicals, it could be FDA approved? No, I don't think they'd be like loss of trust for anything they say if they say that. But cannabis and chemicals from cannabinoids may have medicinal value. Absolutely. And I've talked to lots of scientists who are doing research on just that, and they're going through the FDA approval process for, you know, various therapeutic means. And they're doing that with trials and purity and following the rules. And if there are FDA-approved cannabis-based products, why not? We already have that. We have Epidiolex that helps treat babies with seizures. These babies are not smoking pot. They have very rare seizures, and they're getting FDA-approved pure cannabidiol oil. There are, you know, Marinol we talked about, and there may be other, and there may be potential for, there are so many different cannabinoids, there may be therapeutic benefits, and something that goes through the scrutiny of the FDA process, I would trust that, and I would read the product label to know, understand the risks and benefits and indication for use. That's the whole point of the FDA. But to bypass that and say, hey, this plant, yeah, it's kind of good for you. It's got some good things. You know, it'll cure cancer. It'll cure COVID. I mean, that's not.
Well, and you just said it. It's like, I would read the label. There's labels. You get it from a doctor. There's dosage requirements. There's follow-up. That is, like, the number one thing we're missing.
Okay. So if people want to know, I'm not going to tell you to use marijuana, not to use marijuana, unless you have a medical issue, and then I'll tell you about it. But if you want to know and understand the real dangers, if you want to read about the dangers, not from the industry that's trying to make a profit off of you, then read the FDA label on FDA-approved cannabis, THC. And you could just go to your web browser and put in cannabis FDA label and read the side effects. And you will read about psychosis and vomiting and drug interactions. It's all right there. The research has been done already. And you could do that for CBD. Go to your web browser, put in cannabidiol FDA label, and then you'll read about liver problems and suicidal ideations. And it's right there. If you want to use CBD, you should just read the label, make an informed decision, and get your liver enzymes checked once in a while.
You know, speaking of CBD, up until about a year ago, it seemed like you go into a drugstore and everything from vitamins to shampoo had CBD in it. And you go in and look for it now.
Or you thought that it had CBD in it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. But if you go in now, that's not splashed all over the label anymore. You don't see a ton of products with CBD anymore. And I'm wondering why that is. I know the market, the marijuana market in Oregon absolutely crashed because of overproduction and illegal production.
Oh.
And a lot of these outfits that were growing it commercially up there are out of business. There's no controls. But I'm just wondering if that, what's going on with the CBD market?
I don't know, but whenever I don't know, I'd say probably follow the money.
and I'd love to answer that question for all of you. And it has to do with online sales. And online sales have exploded.
There were several studies on CBD products that were sold that had impurities, including pesticides and iron. And people were buying CBD from Amazon or wherever. Don't really know what they're buying.
Yeah.
The one thing I could tell listeners are, and this is true for any herbal supplement. You know, I take vitamin D for vitamin D deficiency. So how do I know that the vitamin D I'm buying at Costco, Walmart, Walgreens is really vitamin D, 5,000 international units? I buy the label that has a USP label on the bottle. If that company went through the trouble to go through a USP certification, then I could trust that really has 5,000 international units. And that's true for any, if you're buying zinc or whatever supplements that you're getting, if you see a USP label, that, you know, you could trust that. Oh,
that's good advice.
And Dr. Lev, I spoke over you, and maybe you didn't hear my answer, and I said, I was answering Bill's question, and I said, our investigations is that marijuana is now being sold online illegally across the United States, and it's very, very easy to purchase it. You just Google it, and you can get it sent to you by USPS or FedEx or UPS, and the feds are not doing a lot about stopping it right now. So that's going on.
Yeah, that's crazy because, Postal Service.
Probably marijuana, but probably all the psychedelics. I've had patients who come in the emergency department with psychosis from severe. I had this one lady that last shift, she cut her neck and her wrist. I had to admit her actually to the trauma unit from these psychedelic products. And
she freaked out and tried to cut her own neck and her own wrist?
Yes, hearing voices that told her that she needs to do that in order to save her boyfriend's life. Right. So psychosis is a terrible, terrible disease.
Okay. For the people around you.
Yeah. I wish it was that easy to get my prescription medications as it is to get the...
Yeah. We had a question on our chat line here about interactions with the vaccine, the mRNA vaccines. Have you heard of any interactions with marijuana and the COVID vaccine?
I do not know. I don't know about it.
Okay.
I'm not sure of the interactions. I don't think it would be in that drug interaction checker either.
So based on what you've seen...
In general, anything that goes through the liver has potential, because marijuana and CBD is metabolized in the liver. So if it's metabolized in the liver, then it could be a problem. Is the mRNA vaccine metabolized in the liver? I don't think so, but I don't really know.
Ronit, isn't it true that currently like Epidiolex and Marinol, that is only good for a very, very small percentage of the population, single digit. Do you see that the emerging studies on marijuana will produce great strides in medicine for a variety of legitimate medical reasons? Do you think that's out there, or do you think that it's pretty limited?
I'm kind of a skeptic on that. It's hard for me to be excited about any new medications unless it's something that doesn't exist. So if you're telling me, oh, this will be good for nausea, it's like, well, I got a dozen medications that are good for nausea. You tell me this is going to be good for multiple sclerosis, well, it's like, well, I have already a bunch of other medications that I could use for multiple sclerosis. But if you tell me this is something that could use for withdrawal of marijuana, well, I got nothing right now. So I may be excited about that. If this is going to be a drug that is good for the patient who I just mentioned who's high in the emergency department, they're psychotic, I'm going to have to admit them. They're going to be in the hospital for 3-5 days before they detox, but now I have a medication that can counter that effect, then I'm excited about those kind of medications.
Most patients tell us when we talk to them about marijuana, they say that it's an effective pain medication for them, and that's the reason they smoke it. And when I talk to your colleagues like Dr. Finn is a pain specialist, he said we have much better drugs that we can give than marijuana that are effective for pain, and that marijuana for pain is actually an ineffective drug. Do you concur? I tried to use a medical term for you, like
that
we were
good.
In surgery.
Do you concur, doctor?
I concur, doctor. Dr. Finn is the pain specialist, and I'll tell you what I see in the emergency department. People believe that marijuana is going to help their pain, and there are a lot of, that's probably number one reason people say that they need marijuana as a quote-unquote medicine. But in reality, I think it's probably treating an anxiety and an addiction. They feel that they need it. And when people come into the emergency department and they're hurt, you know, they stub their toe or they break their arm, the people who are using marijuana have a much less ability to self-monitor their own pain, and they need a lot more opioids and a lot longer time in rehabbing from whatever illness or surgery that they have. And studies have shown that as well. Even to the effect that if you're going to have surgery, there's a universal screening advisory that anybody who gets surgery should be screened for marijuana use, because that can affect the amount of anesthesia they need. They need more. So it's kind of having a counter effect, but the people believe, this is a perception, they believe that it's helping their pain, even though the data, the science, and their behavior does not show that.
What are some of the physical attributes? And we're going to go to break here. Right? We're going to go to break.
Way to transition there, Dr. Joe.
Okay.
We took the words right out of his mouth.
Just beat me up. All right, I'll go back to my box now.
It's just like we've always heard. We did take the words right out of his mouth. We'll be right back, though. And we do have a burning question for you. Our conversation is with Dr. Ronit Lev. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
The spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, but it's all going to pot.
Hi, this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super
bad. You know I'm here for the party. Yeah.
Yep, it's all fun and games until you're there for the party, and then it all goes wrong. All right, so we have given Officer Joe enough time to collect himself, get the words back in his mouth. Are you ready?
I had to remember what they were, but I have. And Dr. Lev, I'm taking you back to your first year of medical school and paramedicine, and I'm going to ask you about the physical attributes of someone under the influence. And it's important because we as peace officers, we go through an 80-hour class for drug recognition training, and when we pull somebody over for being under the influence and we suspect there's marijuana, we have to go through a complete physical set of signs and symptoms to be part of our, whether we're going to make an arrest for being under the influence of marijuana. So let's talk about some of these signs and symptoms. Someone who's under the influence of marijuana, blood pressure, up or down?
It all depends on the amount, but first of all, thank you, because I don't want to share the road or risk my life with people who are under the influence of marijuana. It does change vision, perception, timing. Blood pressure, again, you're not going to be out in the field checking blood pressures, and it may not be affected, and it depends on how much. If you're taking high potency a lot, all of a sudden your blood pressure may be high because it's acting as a stimulant. Your blood pressure, heart rate may be way high. But I had a guy who waxed marijuana, and he went into complete cardiac collapse. His blood pressure dropped, and he needed to be intubated in the ICU and on blood pressure support. So everything is dose dependent. It's not so clear cut.
Okay, pulse. How about pulse? Up or down?
Again, it depends on the amount. It could be, you know, if you don't take much, it may be nothing. If you're using all of a sudden as a stimulant, it would be high.
Respirations.
Again, probably not affected as
good
much.
Thing he became a policeman and not a doctor.
Actually, just so Dr. Lev knows, we do take blood pressures. We take usually in the station, but sometimes in the field on people who are under the influence of marijuana.
Really?
Interesting.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
Yep. Okay, so we've got blood pressure, pulse, respiration, skin signs. Any change?
Yeah, it depends on the amount. And, I think it's hard for law enforcement to be officers just to do that, because there's so many, a lot of times people you're seeing, you don't know what they're on. You don't know if it's marijuana. Chances are it's mixed.
Absolutely. Poly drug use. That's absolutely what we see in the field.
So it'd be mixed marijuana and meth or just marijuana. If somebody is diaphoretic, that's a red sign that something's not right.
For those of us who didn't go to medical school and are not policemen, what's a diaphoretic?
Diaphoretic, sorry, moist.
Sweating for those, you know, glowing for women, sweating for men.
So if I run into somebody who's sweating a lot and uses the word dude, is that...
you've got probably...
Good chance.
Up here, maybe it's
you
meth.
Go to the first line of throw mama from the train. The night was diaphoretic. New word.
Okay, blood pressure, pulse, respiration.
Diaphoretic. Now you got to use it somehow.
I did.
Diaphoretic.
Blood pressure, pulse, respiration, skin signs. Oh, the big one, level of consciousness.
That's huge. Again, and it's not going to tell you if someone's diaphoretic or their level of consciousness is off. It won't tell you what drug they're on. It'll tell you that they're off, right? And then you need to do testing to figure out what they're taking.
And your primary test in the hospital, you're going for urine?
First of all, we don't test everybody because our goals is different, right? As an officer, you're like, okay, well, I want to make sure the streets are safe for other people and following the law and not endangering, risking others. My goal in the emergency department is to make sure that people live and are better and understand what happened to them and treat and prevent. So I may not need a test, but if I do a test, it's a urine test. And urine tests are not great for marijuana, but they're there. And like I said, you know, more than 50% of people that we test are actually positive.
Is that because of the metabolites and how they're used in the body?
Right. So the people who use marijuana more often, remember it was fat soluble, so it goes to the brain, lives around in the liver and storage cells for a longer. So it could be. They say people who use chronic marijuana all the time, every single day, they could test positive for even up to a month afterwards. But again, it's measurement. It's not going to be way up high for a month after you use marijuana when, if you haven't used it. It may be there, but it'd be a very low amount. So it's never like a clear cut answer. You have to, you know, make estimates.
So, Ronit, I kind of have a sense when someone gets high, the actual, you know, what happens in what space of time. As a doctor, what do you see? So someone uses, for example, let's say they use honey oil, high potency honey oil, and so that's in their body. What is happening to them physiologically at that point, and what time span, as far as you're aware?
So let me answer that in for the drug driving, right? So because we've done studies of that, where we've taken healthy volunteers, having them smoke marijuana or use edibles, and put them in a simulator, and looked at their ability to drive, their hand motor coordination, and also their perception if they feel like they're good enough to drive. And those studies have showed that if you smoke marijuana, you probably shouldn't drive for 4.5 hours. Because under 4.5 hours, you may feel like you're fine and get behind the wheel, and you don't have a perception that you're impaired, but you are impaired according to these studies of hand motor coordination, you know, stuff. They may actually do this in a car simulator. For edibles, it is longer, like 8 hours or longer, again, because it takes longer for you to get in and to get it out of your system. And again, it affects your vision, hand-eye coordination, memory, ability to process thinking. It's different than alcohol, right? We talked about that, and I have a drug driving prosecutor who says, get your beer goggles off when you're thinking about marijuana and other drugs. It's what happens with alcohol that, you know, law enforcement is very familiar with. Marijuana and drugs act differently in your inability to drive. So I think that the more important question is level of impairment. Is your thinking and motor skills affected in a way that impair your driving from whatever drug? I don't care what drug it is, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, your prescription Xanax, or it doesn't matter what medication it is. If you're impaired, then you shouldn't be driving.
Cumulative effects physiologically on the body of marijuana, what are they?
Yeah, so we know, and the most common would be marijuana and alcohol if we're talking about driving, that if 0.08 is a legal limit for alcohol, if you add marijuana to that, then maybe the legal limit needs to be 0.05, again, depending on how much marijuana and potency that is used. So that is definitely additive effect, and we're seeing that in fatality data for motor vehicle collisions, where while alcohol is still now ahead of marijuana is a close second for fatalities, and the combination is definitely deadly.
Isn't it true that marijuana, well, one of the classic signs of addiction is that you need more of the drug to obtain the same condition, and you never get back to where you wanted to be originally? Doesn't marijuana have the same effect? In other words, if you're a heavy marijuana user, do you require more product in the future? And how does it affect the body that way?
Yeah, and it's the same way, same mechanism when we talked about the dopamine for marijuana or tobacco or cocaine or heroin or opiates. It affects your dopamine. So if you're getting a dopamine surge, and whatever amount of marijuana you're using, your body says, okay, well, I'm not going to make my own dopamine, and now your new level of normal for needing dopamine is higher. And the more you use, the more your baseline dopamine require is higher, and it's a vicious circle. And
so
it can go back to normal.
It's not just a mental addiction, then. It winds up being a physical addiction.
It's a chemical addiction.
It's a chemical, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that you need more and more. And then also, to muddy the waters even more for you guys, people don't like to talk about marijuana, but people like to talk about fentanyl and that we need to do something
right
for fentanyl.
All right.
Right. 183 people a day dying from fentanyl.
Right.
So why do I talk about marijuana if I'm talking about fentanyl, and I can't not talk about it because every single patient I see who uses fentanyl or overdosed by accident on fentanyl, if they're lucky enough to reach me in the emergency department, I ask them to give me their journey into drugs. And invariably, their journey to drugs started at a very young age with marijuana. And so they started priming their brain. And sometimes they tell me, like, 9 years old, 10 years old. And that conversation is important because I tell them, if you've been training your brain to be on drugs, even if it's, they think it's just weed, but if it's, even if it's just weed, you've been training your brain to need drugs from that a young age, 1 week of Suboxone is not going to fix this problem for your opiate use disorder. But, and not everybody uses marijuana is going to die of fentanyl, or end up using fentanyl. But almost everybody, a huge, like, over 90% of people who are using fentanyl now on purpose or not on purpose started, their journey, with marijuana.
And we don't tell people that fentanyl's good for them, but we tell people marijuana's okay for
it's
you.
It's medicine.
It's medicine.
It's medicine. And Officer Joe always tells everybody, when was the last time your doctor prescribed something that needed to be smoked?
Hello.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Zero times.
Right. We have inhaled products, like people who have asthma, right? Then we have medications that are dispensed through through your lungs and they help with asthma. And through the lung is a very effective delivery system of getting chemicals into your blood when you need them. So there was actually extensive research and almost product reaching the market for insulin. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to inhale your insulin instead of getting yourself shots, right? So they thought there was a lot of promise in that research. And the reason it hasn't gone anywhere is in order to get insulin to your lungs, you have to, like, study your lung capacity, make sure that it's okay, that it doesn't hurt your lung. And that became too onerous to develop this insulin via the lung. So, yeah, almost never is smoking something good for you. And speaking of the lungs, should I keep going?
Sure. Got a couple minutes.
Studies of, well, let me ask you guys, they did a study, they did CAT scans. Well, you're going to guess the answer, but they did CAT scans. They compared CAT scans of people who smoke cigarettes to smoking marijuana, and which was worse.
I'm going for marijuana.
But yeah, your lungs look way worse from smoking marijuana than smoking cigarettes.
Why is that? Because, you know, you picture tobacco as just being a lot of tar. But
well, it's really heavily processed.
And
you look
But probably also the way you smoke, you tend to hold your lung in.
Right,
you know.
Right. Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with the other contaminants, like the heavy metals and the pesticides and that sort of thing? I mean, do they ever
definitely
test for that?
I don't know if they've been broken down to, like, which pesticides and chemicals, but we know that the smoke from marijuana combustion and the ones from tobacco have the same toxins, same irritants, same carcinogens, also have the same risk for lung cancer. I treated a patient during COVID who had chest pain, 27 years old, came in with chest pain. We put him in the COVID unit. I saw him with my little astronaut gear, you know, thinking he's got COVID. He didn't have COVID. He was just very anxious during the pandemic, smoking and smoking, and he popped his lungs. Actually, have him on one of my early podcasts, and he talked about his experience, but not good. They also did another interesting study of secondhand smoke. And what do you think produces more secondhand smoke, a Marlboro cigarette, vaping, or a joint?
A joint.
You guys are so smart. Yeah.
She walked us right into it. It took us 2 hours, but we got there. Dr. Lev, we have to jump off here. It's going to cut us off, but... You know what?
Thank you.
We would love to do this again with you any old time. You've got a platform with us. Thank you so much.
Thank
Dr. Rodney Lev has been our guest. You can find this recording at wethepeopleradio.us.
You rock, Doc. We love you.
Holy hell. We can't hold back, though, you know. We wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Election time is upon us, and time to vote for candidates who understand how destructive marijuana is for our country, how it harms our youth, hurts our workforce, causing health and psychological problems. Perhaps you've witnessed evil politicians taking marijuana money. Well, there is an alternative. We endorse Jess Harris for Siskiyou County Supervisor. Jess has the knowledge, skills, and most importantly, the will to address illegal dope growers in Siskiyou. Jess has worked tirelessly developing sound policy to deal with the scourge of drugs in our communities. Vote Jess Harris 2024. I'm Officer Joe, and I approve this message.